Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
Today on The Brian Lehrer Show, NPR's Mara Liasson previews tonight's debate coming up in just a minute. In our 30 Issues in 30 Days series today, we'll ask how much should the United States fear China and how much should we be more like China? Plus, we have the Libertarian candidate for president live in our studio today, former New Mexico Governor Gary Johnson. And David Cote, theater editor for Time Out New York, previews the fall theater season, including the latest revival of Annie. We will get to Mara Liasson in 60 seconds. I do want to tell you first, though, that this is day one of our fall membership drive, and we sincerely hope that everyone who listens to WNYC on a regular basis will help us pay to run the place. If that includes you, please call 1-888-376-WNYC. Mark this phone number down now, even if you don't use it right now, 1-888-376-9692, or you can pledge online at WNYC.org. We'll talk more about it later, but just wanted to let you know that Pledge Week is beginning, and we do hope you'll come through with something, maybe $5 or $10 a month, to help us pay the bills. Thanks a lot for considering it or doing it right now and getting it out of the way right away at 1-888-376-WNYC, 1-888-376-9692, or pledge online at WNYC.org. And in advance to all of you, thanks a lot. Now to NPR's political analyst, Mara Liasson, on debate night morning. Hi, Mara.
Hi, Brian. How are you doing?
Good. Are you here? Are you on Long Island?
No, I am not on Long Island. Tonight, Don Gagne will be in Long Island, and I was in Denver, and it's my turn to be in the studio tonight, but I am going to Boca Raton on Monday for the final debate.
Okay. Well, we'll be listening. And first of all, do you happen to know why this debate is here on Long Island at all? I mean, they just did a Hofstra debate in 2008. I'm sure the university does a great job as host, but they were just here, and New York is not a swing state.
No, but the debate commission picks the locations of these debates, and there are a lot more criteria than swing states. They often tend to go back to a university that has experience doing it. It's really a complicated logistical exercise to hold these debates. So for a while, Washington University in St. Louis held vice presidential debates over and over again. So it really has nothing to do with whether the state is a battleground or not, but really whether the venue can meet all the criteria of the debate commission.
And I gather all the questions in this town hall style debate will come from residents of Nassau County, which actually could be a swing county given its voting
Nassau
history.
Nassau County is a pretty Republican county for New York State, and all of the questions come from the audience members. There are about 80 of them. They were chosen by the Gallup organization. They are, we are told, uncommitted voters. They haven't made up their minds, and they're going to submit questions, and then Candy Crowley, the moderator from CNN, is going to choose the questions that will be posed. I don't think we'll get more than 12 to 15 of them.
And, of course, a lot has been said about Candy being the first woman to moderate a presidential debate in 20 years. Of course, Martha Raddatz did the vice presidential debate last week, but this is a presidential debate. But as the moderator of a town hall, is she even allowed to ask any questions of her own?
Well, she certainly thinks so, and she wasn't party to any kind of an agreement with the debate commission that would limit her ability to do that. So she has said in numerous interviews that she feels free to pose follow-up questions after the audience members ask the candidates their question, and I think she will do that.
Well, I can't wait. The media have focused so much on President Obama failing to challenge Romney in debate number one, but I thought not nearly enough has been said about Romney's sudden lurch to the center in that debate. Here is New York Magazine political writer John Heilman characterizing that on yesterday's show.
And he comes out on the debate stage, and all of a sudden, not in a gradual way is he making this shift back to the center, on one night, boom, 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 boom.
Now, Mara, we know all candidates play to their party's bases during the primaries and then tack to the center in the general election. But John's take was that Romney made an abrupt change in tone and content, different than what we've seen in past campaigns. Is that your take, too?
Yeah, I think he made a pretty big shift to the center. He certainly what the difference was between the persona that he presented in the debate and the stereotype of him that most battleground voters have seen in the attack ads from the Obama campaign. How big a lurch it was depends on your point of view. Of course, the Romney campaign would say he's still consistent with the proposals he's been making on the campaign trail, but maybe there was a little bit difference in tone. But I think the bottom line is not so much that he changed his tone on these issues, but that the president didn't challenge him and that he was successful at convincing voters to take a fresh look at him. That was the bottom line that came out of the Denver debate. And that's what the president has to make up for tonight.
I guess. Although I still could ask why so much focus on Obama's restraint, which was probably just a debating tactic to try to run out the clock without making news. It obviously didn't work. But so little focus on Romney's attempt to present himself as a different guy and whether that, suggests a character problem.
Well, that's what the Obama campaign has been trying to do ever since the debate ended. They're saying this is a matter of trust. They've run ads about this. But debates are a time when voters get to see two men side by side. So they're not going to focus just on one guy. They're going to focus on the contrast. And what they saw was a president who didn't challenge Romney, who didn't call him out on all these things that liberals are just aghast at when they see Romney changing positions. And I think that the president's performance was really a combination of two things. As you said, they went in with a strategy. They didn't want to engage Romney. They didn't want a big confrontation. They knew independent voters don't like that. But also, I don't think they were overconfident, but they were sitting on their lead. The lead was small. It's now slipped away. But that's what they were doing. And oftentimes when you take a cautious strategy, you're actually taking a risk. And that's what the president did, and it didn't work out. So it was a strategy that I think was probably mistaken, but also it was a performance problem. The president simply failed to take advantage of opportunity after opportunity to call out Romney, to bring up things like the 47% tape or Bain Capital or his tax returns, et cetera, et cetera. He just didn't do that.
Did you get any clues from Romney in that debate as to which Romney would actually govern as president, the severely conservative one, as he described himself earlier this year, or something less than that?
Well, no, and we don't know, and I bet he doesn't, because don't forget, if he's the president and he has a Republican House, we don't know if he's going to have a Republican Senate. Whatever kind of Senate he has is going to have a very, very slim majority, not filibuster-proof. So I think that if you look at Romney's policies, where he has more or less aligned himself with the House Republican agenda, I would say it's going to be a conservative tilt. Now, Democrats will have some kind of leverage. They'll be able to filibuster bills in the Senate if they don't have a majority there or block them. So he'll have to cross the aisle and make deals with the other side if he's the president. And I thought one of the most extraordinary things that he was able to accomplish in Denver was that he convinced people that he could work across the aisle and that he wanted to. And whether or not that's borne out by his experience in Massachusetts, of course, he had to work across the aisle. As he said, he had something like an 85% Democratic legislature. But that, I thought, was one of the biggest victories that he had in Denver, just convincing people that he would work across the aisle, that he wasn't a partisan conservative Republican.
Yeah, and the Democrats say there's a connection between the Etch-a-Sketch Romney, if you will, and the severely conservative Romney. It's not just him moving towards the middle after the primaries, which would be normal. It's him blowing with the political winds, which he has a history of. So they say if he's elected, the fiercest political wind will be the howling of the Tea Party House of Representatives, and he will bend toward that because that's in his nature. So in other words, malleable Mitt would equal severely conservative Mitt because he'd come under the sway of the House. Do you have an analysis of the likelihood of that?
Well, you know, that's the Obama campaign had a choice early on about what strategy it was going to take in attacking Mitt Romney. It could have said he was a flip-flopper, had no core, which they started out doing. But then they changed. One of the biggest voices for the change was Bill Clinton. He said, don't do that. Just attack him for the conservative that he says he is, because that's more effective. Because if you say that he's malleable, and is a flip-flopper, then a lot of voters will say, oh, maybe he's not so conservative. He seems like a pretty nice guy, reasonable businessman, just the kind of person they saw in the debate in Denver, actually. So the Obama campaign has run against him as a conservative. And if you really listen to Romney in Denver, he didn't actually change his positions. When he says he's not going to cut taxes on the wealthy, he didn't mean he wasn't going to cut their tax rates, because he is. He said he's going to give everybody a 20% across-the-board tax rate. But he said he's not going to change the portion of overall tax revenues that the rich people pay. So that's a little bit different. He's also said he's not going to raise taxes on the middle class, and he's not going to pass any kind of a tax cut that would increase the deficit. Now, those are all goals that probably aren't all achievable at once. So one of them is going to have to go. But behind every one of those moderating statements, there's a lot of nuance.
And for Obama, how does he get tougher on Romney tonight without appearing disingenuous, like he's staging it after the response he got to the first debate?
Well, I think that whatever Obama does tonight, Romney's going to say, oh, you're just trying to make up for that failure in Denver. I mean, there's no doubt that Romney's going to try to undercut him and say, oh, now you're playing tough because you were so weak before. I'm not saying that's exactly what he's going to say, but it'll be something along those lines. The president has a very difficult task. He's put tremendous pressure on himself. He's really put himself in a box because he has to do too many things tonight. Number one, he has to push back against Romney's move to the center. He also has to call him out on things that he thinks are falsehoods, while at the same time connecting with whoever is asking him a question from the audience. Voters in a town hall format don't like to see the two candidates having a kind of a food fight on stage. They want to see the candidate connecting with the concerns and problems of ordinary middle-class people, which is something where the president had a huge advantage over Romney until very recently. So he has to do a lot of things tonight. He also has to be more energetic. I think that's the easiest of his tasks. It's almost impossible to be any more passive than he was in Denver, so I don't think that's going to be a problem. But pushing back against Romney at the same time that you're connecting with voters is tough, because when you look at who's won these kind of town hall formats before, it's been the person who can empathize the best. You know, Bill Clinton was a master at this format. And up until now, you'd have to give that edge to Obama. He certainly was seen as someone who is more able to understand the problems of ordinary voters, and his whole background and experience is more similar to an ordinary middle-class person. But Romney's been humanizing himself. That was one of his main goals in Denver, and he did accomplish it to a certain extent.
NPR's Mara Liasson will be listening to your coverage tonight. Thanks so much for coming on with us.
Thank you.
And don't forget, tonight, again, everybody, we will have live coverage. And again, I'll be hosting a pre-debate call-in for listeners to WNYC and to our mostly swing states public radio network. The call-in begins at 8 o'clock, 1 hour before the debate here on WNYC. We'll also have coverage on our politics website, itsafreecountry.org, including a live chat throughout the debate and debate night bingo at itsafreecountry.org. Brian Lehrer on WNYC. Coming up next, our 30 Issues in 30 Days segment for today. Issue number 20, should the U.S. fear China, and should the U.S. be more like China? Stay with us.